And we end the show today at the State House, where Governor Maura Healey joins us for our monthly conversation. Governor Healey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Great to be with you, Simone. I had the opportunity to start my day in Carlisle. The Lieutenant Governor and I were meeting with our firefighters who were setting off from DCR. These are state firefighters, specifically in our forestry division, who are actually headed to Quebec and Canada to assist in fighting the fires up there. And, you know, it was just great to be able to meet them and wish them a safe return. But I just want to mention that because I think a lot of people, you know, probably don't know that we have whole teams of firefighters out there working here in the state and fighting fires, including recently the one out at Lynn Woods. But they're also on call and available to help out regionally. You know, regionally, these are men and women who've also been to the Mountain West and the Rockies. And, you know, I think I had an opportunity to meet with some of the premiers from the various Canadian provinces a couple weeks ago, and there's an important relationship there, and we always have to look, you know, to make sure that we're supporting our sister states as well as, you know, our friends to the north when we can help, because
well,
they
Governor
will be
Healey,
there for us.
Thank you for pointing that out. It is an issue that matters here in Massachusetts as well. But I want to start off with a case from Harvard Medical School that's in the headlines. A former manager of a morgue there being charged with selling body parts from donated cadavers. A little bit macabre here, but you're a Harvard alum and a former AG for Massachusetts. Does the state have any regulatory authority over medical school morgues?
No, as of right now, the state does not. Our Office of Medical Examiner does not. We'll take a look at it, obviously. My understanding is these types of donations are arranged for privately between individuals and institutions. What appears, though, to be the case is that this is part of a nationwide scheme, and it's under investigation and prosecution by federal authorities. So that will play itself out in federal court. But I think, obviously, disturbing to know that, you know, this is happening or was happening in parts of the country and including right here.
Yeah, it's the stuff of nightmares, and I hope that's the end of it.
But truly.
You said that you'll be taking a look at it. Will there be any investigations from the state as to this?
No. The federal authorities have it, and as a matter of jurisdiction, it's important to let them go with this. Again, this isn't limited to Massachusetts. It's nationwide in terms of the arrest and the players, and so it's appropriate for federal authorities with the jurisdiction to handle a nationwide investigation and prosecution to continue with that. Obviously, we'll support, you know, to the extent any support is necessary, but I don't contemplate that.
Okay, so we're going to continue today with a few news of the day topics. First, the Supreme Court is deciding whether to uphold the use of race in college admissions, aka affirmative action. Yesterday, a new group met for the first time with the aim of advising your office on the Supreme Court decision. Are there ways to ensure that our universities stay diverse, even if affirmative action is banned? What's this group talking about?
Well, I just want to be really clear to people in Massachusetts and to students and prospective students that folks are welcome here in Massachusetts. No Supreme Court ruling is going to change that. We've been a national leader in education. We're home to the first university, first public school, first public library. And I think we're strong because of our commitment to equity and inclusion. And as a former civil rights lawyer, head of the AG's Civil Rights Division, I have some familiarity with these cases and the challenges over the years to efforts to ensure a more inclusive learning environment, which, by the way, is not good just for students and for a university. It's really good for employers, for the workplace, for where we need to go. So I feel really strongly about this. When we knew that the Supreme Court was taking this up, we had engaged in a lot of discussions and thought about this. I announced yesterday that we have an advisory group of 40-something people who are looking at ways that no matter what the Supreme Court rules, we are going to find ways to maintain a commitment to inclusivity, to diversity, to ensuring that we have student bodies that reflect truly the composition of our communities. And what that means is supporting programs and tools that break down some of these barriers to higher education. specifically for students of color, for first-generation students, and others. This includes the MEFA Pathway Program, which is an online college and career planning resource that we're now making available to all for free. And we're doing this in a coordinated outreach campaign targeting some of our gateway cities. We're also expanding our MICAT program, which is an in-school initiative that helps students plan for their futures by connecting them with resources and programming.
Governor Healey, the meeting yesterday was closed mm-hmm. to the public, to reporters. Will future meetings be open to the public?
We'll see. We'll see as we go. You know, right now what's important to me, and again, I come to this with some familiarity based on my prior work as a civil rights lawyer and litigating some of the very issues that are before the Supreme Court. You know, the job that we have here in government is to make sure that whatever the Supreme Court rules, we are still on course for maintaining, ensuring equity, inclusivity, and representation. It's good for our schools. It's good for our students. It's good for our workplace and economy. I think if you'd ask employers, if you ask board members, they will tell you that bottom line is always better when it is more representative. The studies bear that. And I think, you know, our job in Massachusetts is to make sure that our students are prepared when they leave their education. They are prepared to go out and compete in the world. And it is a global economy.
And, well, another thing know, that matters to be, there. Yeah, yeah. Another thing
no,
that matters
just, it's just
there,
really
right,
important.
Is the, I was going to really say important. The MBTA, let's switch gears. The current contract with Keolis, the company that manages the commuter rail, is going to expire in 3 years. And transportation leaders on Beacon Hill in the legislature sent you a letter this week asking you to start working on this now. I'm curious to hear, you know, if it's something that's on your mind. What's at stake with the next commuter rail contract?
Well, it's something we should be looking at, and we are looking at right now. You know, we want to make sure that that process goes as smoothly and as quickly as possible. Any procurement process, which is the process we have to undertake as a state when we hire on any vendor, it does take time, and there are certain rules that need to be followed for that. But we know how important both the commuter rail and the T is to our economic growth here and to the lives of residents really around the state. So I think that focus is absolutely what's needed. We're going to bring a lens, really, that's going to focus on what are the best possible outcomes a prospective vendor can provide in terms of driving service improvements, financial sustainability, and also, in this moment, achieving our climate goals. And so we're going to really want to test the market and make sure that we're getting the very best partner for that.
We're talking with Maura Healey, Governor of Massachusetts. Now, Governor Healey, it's Pride Month, as you know, across the country. More than 500 anti-LGBTQ bills have been introduced this year, including things like restrictions on gender-affirming care, bans on books and drag performances. That's not as much the case in Massachusetts, of course. And you would argue, I believe, that that's part of what makes this state competitive. I'm curious to hear if you could talk about what more needs to be done to make Massachusetts more of a safe haven in this regard and why that makes us competitive.
Well, I think you make a great point, and it's one of the things that I've been trying to really drive home in my messaging and my comments here at Pride Month. You know, when you look at other states, over 500 bills introduced that will take away LGBTQ plus protections rights, ban books, ban drag performances, ban gender affirming care, ban, you know, the ability of people to really express and be who they are. And it's I think, really distressing for many of us here in Massachusetts, where we've been at the forefront of making sure that those protections are in place. So, you know, my call to people is, look at Massachusetts. We're home to the greatest human talent, intellectual capital, innovation, research. Look at our healthcare system. You know, we protect people's access not only to healthcare and ensure universal coverage, we also protect access to abortion and reproductive healthcare. Similarly, we protect LGBTQ plus people. And I want people around the country to know that Massachusetts is a place where you can come, you can go to school here, you can raise a family here, you can grow a business here, you can live here and be who you are, and your rights will be protected. And I think in the moment where we see other states you know, going in other directions. It's just yet another reason for people to come to Massachusetts. Sure, we have our challenges. We're working on driving down the cost of housing. We're working on improving public transit. But at the end of the day, this is a place that has always recognized the importance of protecting certain fundamental freedoms, protecting civil rights, protecting voter rights, taking on issues of climate and being a climate leader, and really healthy, safe, livable communities here in Massachusetts. And I think in this moment, you know, we have a chance to really distinguish ourselves. Think about the young people who are graduating, or think about the people who are deciding where they're going to go to school. And I have heard anecdotally from so many decisions about, you know, whether to go to school in Texas or in Florida. They are and they should be informed by what kind of access to health care is your young person going to have? What kind of protections are they going to have, you know, either as a woman or as a member of the LGBTQ plus community? These things really matter. And I just want to remind people that here in Massachusetts, you know, we take care of people, and we're going to make sure that people have access to protections and
well, Governor Healey, we reached out to.
And by the way, Disney is welcome here in Massachusetts.
Okay,
certain
Disney World
certain
Northeast
governors don't want Disney. I say we welcome Disney and other employers.
Okay, we reached out to our text club to see if they have questions or feedback for you, Governor Healey. If listeners want to join that club, by the way, they can do it by texting Boston to 617-766-0382. So Maureen in Milford says, I quote, "I think Healey's administration is doing a great job. My concerns are that we maintain abortion rights in Massachusetts and that there are more affordable opportunities for our young working adults in Worcester County and Central Mass." And I wanted to highlight that text because one way your administration is looking at increasing housing is through the launch of the Massachusetts Community Climate Bank. So this will be an initial investment of $50 million from the Department of Environmental Protection to offer low-interest loans to spur more investment in climate-friendly, affordable housing, and specifically retrofitting existing buildings to make them more green. Talk to us about that.
I'm delighted to. And Maureen, thanks for the message. Know that the LG and I are big-time supporters of Central Massachusetts. We want to do everything, from increasing educational opportunities for students to growing opportunities for housing, which we know is so key, as well as jobs. So we hear you, Maureen, on that, and we're really focused on that. And my new Secretary of Housing, actually, is Ed Augustus, the former city manager of Worcester, whose job is to drive housing production around the state. Let me talk to you about the Climate Bank. Super exciting. First of its kind in the country. This is going to be our financial engine for moving forward on our climate goals while also relieving the pressure of high housing costs by creating more housing out there, more affordable housing. And I'm really excited about it. We're seeding this with $50 million in state funding, but that's going to be leveraged because through that funding, we'll be able to attract private sector investment as well as federal funding coming from all that money that is out there, a lot of it which is designated for climate. So, you know, this is really exciting. We expect McKinsey and others estimate that for every dollar a state puts in, you're going to be able to attract, you know, between 7 and 14 additional dollars in investment. And what's exciting about our Community Climate Bank is that it has a focus on creating affordable housing, affordable, climate-friendly, sustainable housing. And this means new housing in some instances. It means rehabilitation, preservation of existing housing, including public housing that desperately needs an upgrade. But we're going to be able to do a lot. And I really am excited. The other day, you know, we had private developers, carpenters and laborers, electricians at our press conference. We had environmental advocates. We had housing advocates. Everybody's working together on this. It's going to help us meet our climate goals. It's going to create more affordable housing for the state.
Well, thank you so much.
Good jobs and healthier communities. So thank you for flagging it.
On Monday, the state Supreme Court announced that Justice Ellie Cipher will retire next January after serving for nearly 7 years. She just turned 64, which is before the mandatory retirement age of 70, your administration has said it will start looking for her replacement. What do you want to see from your first state Supreme Court justice?
As with any appointment that we're able to make, we want to see the top quality candidate for that position. So, you know, we'll pursue that when it comes to the SJC appointment, which won't be for a while, because Justice Cypher will continue to serve through the end of the year. And we are grateful for her service to the state. We also have formed our Judicial Nominating Commission that has met already, and there are any number of appointments coming up in the coming weeks and months for judges at and throughout our courts in the Commonwealth.
Not just the Supreme Judicial Court, but elsewhere.
Absolutely. And it's something, you know, that's very important for any administration to do and to do well.
We're talking with Maura Healey, governor of Massachusetts. Now I want to switch gears to a criminal justice issue. You're about to have a press conference this afternoon, what you're calling a major criminal justice announcement. Are you able to preview for us what you can expect? There's some pardons coming down the line.
I will say this, that as has been reported, today we are announcing our recommendation of 7 pardons to the Governor's Council. This is significant because it's at the start of an administration. But our view is that, you know, we shouldn't wait to the end of one's term to recommend pardons or take action with respect to clemency. Our administration views clemency as an important executive power that really can help soften the harsher edges of our criminal justice system. And we're currently working, in addition to making these recommendations, we're working to modernize our state clemency guidelines to better center them on fairness and racial and gender equity. So we're pleased to be able to make this announcement today.
This is early on for you. Generally, we see these types of pardons happening at the end of administrations. Why are you doing it so early?
Yeah, I think we're the first administration since maybe Governor Weld to issue a pardon recommendation in the first term, and we're doing it, you know, within our first 6 months. But again, this is about fairness, justice. Clemency is an important executive power, in my view. It shouldn't wait to the end of administration. Justice should never have to wait. And so as these come before us and we think they're appropriate, we're going to move forward.
Tell us about the individuals. I believe it's 7 people who could be pardoned. Of course, it has to be approved by the Governor's Council. Who are these folks and why did you choose them?
Well, these are all individuals who went through a process of substantial vetting in terms of their circumstance, both what their crimes, their convictions were, and then what they've done with their life following conviction. And I think all of these individuals really met our standard for the kind of people we want to see forgiven for their underlying offenses. They're all, you know, they've been engaged in all sorts of community service, volunteer work, as well. And, you know, the reason that a pardon is important too is that you don't want somebody's criminal conviction to stand in the way of them furthering themselves with other opportunities for themselves and their families. And if people are interested, they can tune in. We'll have a press conference as soon as I hop off, actually. If you go to mass.gov/governorlive at 12, you'll be able to meet and hear more about the 7 individuals who are being recommended for pardon today.
You talked about the standards, that there are clemency standards in determining who should be eligible for these kinds of pardons. Could you talk about that a little more?
Well, you know, right now we made a decision to recommend these pardons based on existing standards. We are also, though, undertaking a review to make changes to the current clemency standards. And so, you know, that's also important. But again, as somebody who is both the Attorney General and head of the Civil Rights Division, both a prosecutor and a civil rights attorney, I do come to this with a true commitment, as I know the Lieutenant Governor does as well, to making sure that we have a criminal justice system that is fair, that is equitable. We have work to do in terms of reforms. And also, you know, with this, with the issue of pardons and clemency, you know, these are people who have done their time. They've done their time, and they've shown to have really grown from the various life circumstances that, you know, they were dealing with at the time, and that led them to the conviction. And I mean, we feel really good about moving forward with these.
What do you say to people? I mean, I can imagine folks here in Massachusetts in prison who feel that they've done their time, maybe for, you know, a petty drug conviction that happened 10 or 20 years ago, however long it might be. And they say, well, that's great for these seven individuals who are about to be pardoned by the governor, but there are thousands of us. When is it going to be our turn to get this kind of pardon?
Well, everything is case by case, individual by individual. That said, this is part of the review that we're undertaking right now. And, you know, we want to support, you know, the efforts to make sure that a clemency system is operating fairly expeditiously as well. And also, it's important to make sure that we are providing the right kind of programming and resources, both to prevent people from becoming criminal justice involved, but also for those who are involved, what are we doing for reentry? What are we doing for programming? What are we doing to provide training and assistance, both, you know, educational as well as therapy, mental health, substance use disorder, and the like? And these are things that my administration is very focused on right now.
Okay, so regardless of the pardons today, you plan to adjust how your administration will consider pardons in the future. There will be more to come?
Absolutely.
That's Governor Maura Healey joining us from the State House. Governor Healey, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great, great day.